Hey everyone, welcome to Phil Goes to Camp. I am the titular Phil, and the titular camp is Camp Crystal Lake, home turf of one Jason Voorhees. If you're new here, I'm watching the Friday the 13th series of movies for the first time in my life. Also, if you're new here, please peruse our back catalog of regular episodes. My son Austin and I have over 100 in-depth movie reviews and some bonus episodes like this back in the archives. Go check those out. Today, we reach the end by going back to the beginning. I'm here to talk about the Friday the 13th remake, released in 2009. I don't want to put this up against the Star Trek pattern of quality, because that pattern applies to the TOS timeline of Trek movies. So I think comparison to the Friday the 13th movies should also only apply to the original main series of movies, that is, parts 1 through 10, or X, as, you know, Jason X. There was, in 2009, aside from this reboot, there was a Star Trek reboot that came out that year. So, you know, I think we can compare the quality to that. It was a restart for both franchises. It seems like kismet. Both are very enjoyable, fun, well-made movies that are in many ways tributes to their respective source material. They're effective fan service delivery devices, and they also both change up some aspects of the originals to make them more effective action blockbusters, instead of rooting them in their respective genres. Trek is more of an action movie set in space than a philosophical science fiction movie. And Friday the 13th is more of an action movie in the style of like Predator than a traditional slasher horror movie. So I think they're both high quality films for what they are. And both shaking up, you know, what came before them a little bit. Still staying true to it, but kind of putting their own fingerprints on it. I think they're both good movies, and in this timeline, they are matching up one for one on quality odd-numbered movies. Good job, guys. This is, I think, that they both came out in 2009 is really interesting. And I think it's the most perfect way our franchise comparison experiment could have ended. I couldn't have planned this, and I didn't, which is why I'm so shocked by it, that I won't shut up about it. Anyway, let's carry on this train of thought. Yes, I think this is a good Friday the 13th movie. This is probably the highest quality movie of all of them. It's newer, of course. It's, you know, it's still a New Line movie. It's a major studio. These aren't independent movies anymore. This is a 2009 film. Of course, it's going to look better. But it is just higher. It's a more watchable movie. It's a more professional movie. It's the highest quality in terms of production value, cinematography, and acting we've seen in a movie in this entire franchise. But that said, I'm not sure it's fair to hold this up against the rest of the franchise, so I don't want to compare it too much, but I do want to talk about this a little bit. Is this the best Friday the 13th movie? Probably, just because of the reasons I listed. It's the best production value in all of them. But is that a fair comparison, since it contains so many elements from the rest of the movies? Probably not. Is T.B. Sheets the best album of the early Van Morrison catalog? Probably. But it doesn't really count because it's a compilation. All the parts on that album are parts of his bigger, wider catalog of that time period that have been proven to work. They just harvested the parts that work and put them together in one thing. And that's what this movie is too. It's a greatest hits album. It's pulling so much from the original franchise that it almost feels unfair to compare them. It's sort of like, you know, it's TV Sheets is an example. Who Made Who, the AC/DC album. It's really a soundtrack. It's previously released material, most of it. So, you know, it's not really fair to call it the best when it's pulling from so many other sources. Other things that were in this movie that came from the original franchise, the flashback that opens the movie, it's basically the end of part one, remade. The cold open that follows that, the kids in the woods, is mostly akin to part two. There's a shrine with the head of Pamela Voorhees. That's from part two. Whitney pretending to be Jason's mom. Also from part two, Baghead Jason, part two. The switch from bag over the head to hockey mask is part three. Unlikable teenage victims, also part three. The brother looking for his sisters from part four. The old lady warning him to stay away from the town and stop looking for his sister. The crazy old person warning people to stay out of Crystal Lake. That's from parts 1, 2, 3, 4, on and on and on. That is a Friday the 13th staple. I'm glad they put it in this one as well. But all this stuff borrowed. Like I said before, I have to give credit to this movie at the same time for weaving the stuff into the story in a good and interesting way. That flashback that opens the movie is the perfect summary of part one without making you sit through part one again. Think of this like, at this time, the MCU was just getting off the ground in 09. But think of it this way. Every time they were rebooting a superhero, every time a new Spider-Man franchise come out, every time a new superhero movie would come out, everyone would complain about the same thing and go, I don't want to watch this origin story again. This movie actually understood that before people were complaining about it. And they don't make you watch the origin story of Jason again. They give it to you in this little flashback scene at the very beginning. And then it is sort of the lore that came from part one that the rest of the franchise is built on. Is just sort of organically woven into this movie. I think they do it really, really good because, you know, as I've said before, I don't like Friday the 13th part one. So I'm glad they didn't just remake that. They made this its own thing where Jason is the killer and it was all set in motion by the same events. It's the best way to kick off this movie, which I believe was supposed to kick off a rebooted franchise. I also have to give props in this movie for the changes it makes to Jason. I really like Jason in this movie. He's very grounded as a sort of same but different kind of killer. He's not this supernatural monster or a zombie or reanimated corpse like he is through most of the original franchise. He's a Jason of the original part two. He's a mentally unbalanced man living in the woods and using his survival skills in the pursuit of hunting humans. That's what he's doing. He gets around with a series of tunnels. He lays traps for people. Literal traps. He lays a bear trap for Ben Feldman. It's amazing. And it really sort of makes him a more interesting character. It makes him seem like, oh, this is an unhinged person who lives in the woods and kills people for sport. And that's really something. I also have to say that that is aided by Derek Mears. He is excellent in this iteration, or as this iteration of Jason. No shade on any of the other Jason actors, especially Kane Hodder, who played him in most of the original movies. But Derek Mears has this physicality to the character that a Jason has never really had before. He's agile, he's athletic, he's energetic when he's chasing somebody. He's running. He throws an axe, and he throws it like somebody, he has form, you know, like he throws it like somebody who knows how to athletically throw something. It makes Jason more interesting. It makes him more fun to watch. It makes him more threatening, I think. And again, no shade on any of the previous Jasons, because not moving a lot or being stoic, that's an acting choice too. And that brings a different level of menace to the character. But this one I thought was really, really, really interesting. I sound like I'm trying to hit a word limit in a book report. There's some great kills in this movie as a result of that. You know, the guy he does kill with an axe is great. But I think my favorite one is he picks up Trent and impales him on, like, the forks of a tow truck. And it's just such a great kill. It comes straight out of nowhere. It's a little surprising. It's over the top. And it's also satisfying because Trent is such an unlikable douchebag. It's so good to see this kid get killed. You've been waiting for it the entire time. And you're kind of happy when it happens. It took me back to, like, part three when I hated all of these characters. And as each of them got killed off, I kind of celebrated it a little bit. Interesting kills brings me to one of my detractions, because there could have been more of them. I heard this interview with Derek Mears on Matt Gourley's great podcast called I Was There Too, and I do recommend this. I recommend the whole show, but this is a really good episode that he had. Mears talks about being a stunt performer, his relationship to the character of Jason. It's actually very interesting. But he also talks about the part in this movie where one of the women, she's water skiing and she's stuck in the lake and she's trying to swim to shore and she sees Jason on shore. And that the way that was supposed to go is she was supposed to, like, swim to one side or the other and him follow her over there. And he just waits her out until she gets tired and drowns. And that is so interesting. It would have been the most sadistic kill. It would have been the most interesting kill, maybe in the entire 12 movies that this franchise is. But it doesn't do that. It made a change. And just instead, she swims under a dock to try to hide from him. And he stabs her through the boards of the dock, through the skull, and just kills her instantly. It's fine. I kind of feel like they did it because he stabs her and then he pulls his knife back up and she goes with it and she comes out of the water and you can see her tits. And it's just sort of like this very gratuitous boob shot that they prioritized over an interesting kill. And I think that's my drawback to this movie. It's less about the choice they made in that specific instance and the reason they made some of the choices that they did. I know this is a movie aimed at teenagers, but these kind of choices, they just feel very cheap. This is a movie aimed at kids, but it seems gratuitous even by those standards. The scenes that have sex and nudity in them, I'm not a prude, I'm not opposed to any of that. Like I talked about before, I think horror movies have become very sanitized. I'm not opposed for or against any of it, but when it is in this movie, it's over the top. It's insane. How gratuitous isn't even the word for it. It's very graphic just for the sake of being graphic. And you know, that's fine. It just strikes me less as a movie made for young teenagers and more of a movie made by young teenagers. It's just sort of like, these are the choices I would make if I was directing this movie at age 14, you know, like it's more boobs, more graphic kills, those kind of things. And I think it does come off that way, because this movie is made by Michael Bay. Maybe it's not fair to say this movie is made by him, but this movie is produced by him. And it does feel like his fingerprints are on it with things like that. It's a more graphic version of the way he sexualizes young women in his Transformers movies and things like that. It's just a lot of very juvenile choices that I heard somebody say one time, Michael Bay's whole creative process comes down to the question, asking himself the question, is this awesome? And that's what he goes with. And that is a lot of what this feels like. Add to that, that the person who actually made this movie, the director, is a guy named Marcus Nispel. And he is, like Bay, someone who got their start directing music videos. His biggest movie titles are also remakes with a lot of boobs. He remade the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he made the Conan the Barbarian movie with Jason Momoa, which is just wall-to-wall tits. Again, fine. No problem with it. But it's a very gratuitous kind of juvenile choice. It's hard to take the movie seriously. I know. Put it all in context. You can't take any of these movies seriously, but you know what I'm saying. But it also, just aside from that, there are choices in this movie. There's just some very pervy behavior and pervy jokes. All the guys are just absolute juvenile perverts. There's a lot of masturbation jokes. There's a character who is licking centerfolds and has sex with mannequins. And it's just, they are bizarre choices to put into this movie. They held no bearing on anything. They're like jokes that aren't funny, but just, you ever known somebody or worked with somebody who's constantly telling off-color jokes? They aren't good enough to be funny. They're not bad enough to be offensive. They just make everybody a little bit uncomfortable. That's what a lot of the humor in this movie plays off as. Two of the people partying at the cabin, they're just sort of uncomfortable weirdo perverts who get high in the corner and talk about masturbating too much. And it's just, it's such a bizarre choice. But when you look at, oh, these are the filmographies of the people behind this movie, it makes a little bit more sense. And you go, this is how we got here. It's not the best place to be. Those drawbacks aside, and taking this movie on face value of what it is and what it's trying to be, I do call this movie a success. I understand there's a lot of hardcore Friday the 13th fans who didn't like this movie, who didn't like the remake for whatever reason. But I've said it before, I didn't grow up with these movies. I don't hold the originals in any kind of like sacred cow headspace. I don't care about any of that. So I didn't bring a lot of baggage into this one when I first saw it. I saw this one the first time a few years ago, and I'm able to just see it for what it is. That, and I think around the same time the Nightmare on Elm Street remake came out with Jackie Earle Haley. And I did see some of those movies growing up. And same thing, though. I don't hold them up as like, oh, these are untouchable movies that are just masterpieces. I saw those remakes and I'm just like, okay, they're fine, whatever. And this one was the same thing. I don't come into this with any baggage. I see this movie on its own terms, and overall, this movie does work for me. Those weird drawbacks and the weird, perverted creative choices aside, this movie, I think, is a lot of fun, and it knows what it is, and it brings some interesting new things to the franchise. So that's it. I've made my way through the final Friday the 13th movie, and that's it. All 12 movies. I have now seen them all. And I'd like to say I'm better for it, but I'm going to have to sit with this for a little while. So I am going to come back for one more mini episode of Phil Goes to Camp. One final night at camp, call it a campfire jamboree to celebrate all the friends we made and possibly murdered along the way. I'm going to come back. I'm going to do one more, just sort of looking back at what this experience of going through this franchise has done to me, and what these movies are as a whole. I want to give my thoughts on that. So I will be back for one more. As for right now, I'm reporting from Camp Crystal Lake, located on the ever fraying edge of my sanity. This is Phil, and I will talk to you next time.